Welcome to Two Lifestyles Royal Table Talk. My name is Latoya Conway Hampton, and I am your host. And today I want to bring to you a young lady that I met a few years ago, and her name is Miss Sally Loya. Hi, Miss Sally. Welcome.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. I'm Sally Loya.
Nice to meet you. I want to go back a little bit, and I want to talk about our original connection. So 2021 or 2020, I'm not sure. One year I was surfing the web and I was looking for women that have experienced domestic violence or sexual assault or substance abuse that want to come back and give back and be the voice for the people that cannot communicate for themselves and allow them to know that that was an experience. It's not who they are. And somehow, way or another, you answered that first text, that first information, that first request. Tell me what made you say yes to the very first conversation we had together.
Honestly, Latoya, it was that I was ready to share my story. Just a few months before the first she experienced and me and joining you in your wonderful organization, I had found my voice, my power, my strength, and I was ready to share my story. Thank you for allowing the platform and giving me that platform. I was just ready. I had felt it was time.
Okay. So you came on to our annual symposium, and first you did because the virtual experience, just virtual, is 3 days. And that Friday, Saturday all day, and then Sunday all day. And you came on and you were amazing. You shared your experience, strength, and hope. You provided a workshop with content and information. But one of the things that you mentioned when we had that conversation, you said, you know what? I am going to start a loyal project, right? And
yes.
Loya project. Tell me a little bit about where that came from, why you chose to do so, and where is it now?
In 2015, after surviving a near-death attack from my abuser and entering a safe house, I knew in that moment that I had to give back. I had to find purpose, that there was purpose in my survival. When I entered the safe house that day in North Carolina, the women formed a circle around me. They prayed for me, and I knew in that moment that I wasn't alone. And it was very important to me to begin a mission so that I can let others know as well that they are not alone. 4 years after my attack in 2015, I began the Loya Project in 2019. 1 year later, I would found and create the Crowns of Courage Project, honoring victims and survivors for their courage and their strength. This year in May, I began the Crowns of Courage legacy because I couldn't just honor those victims and survivors. I had to honor the memories and lives as well as the legacies of those we've sadly lost to domestic violence and sexual assault as well.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for explaining in detail. I so appreciate that because once you have a vision within you, And I like to say it's an assignment from God. That's how I see it. And some people will come in and out of your life because there's a reason and a season for everybody to come in your life. And So as you're creating these legacies and inspiring and empowering everybody, you're going to come across a lot of women and men that have experienced domestic violence and sexual assault, that you will touch their lives and they'll never be the same. And So I want to ask you a few more questions as to your overall environment. So we talked a little bit about where you are and what you're doing now, but tell me what part of your life made you feel like you must give back?
Not only am I a survivor of domestic violence and sexual assault, but I'm a survivor of child molestation as well. Many parts of my life have been hard, and I believe they've been hard to teach me to be strong and make me strong so that I can have the power to help others and the courage and the strength myself in order to help others.
Tell me how, because we're unscripted, I think it's very important as we begin to feel emotions. And you said I'm a survivor of domestic violence, sexual assault, but as a child, you was molested. So yeah. if you don't feel driven to share, don't. But was it like a close family member? Was it a stranger? Tell me a little bit about what that experience was like after getting out.
Yes, I tell you, it was from a family member.
Okay, makes sense. All right. So once, and I ask these questions because sometimes our listeners have experienced the same exact thing. So for me, I was sexually assaulted by my stepfather for about 6 years off and on. And what I realized is that it caused me to be angry. It caused me to be very passive. First, I was passive and then I became angry. And so as a woman that's been able to get out of that, I know how to advocate for myself. I don't shy away from a disagreement. I hit it head on, which I haven't always been able to do that. I would just shy because I want peace and comfort. And the truth of it is I have to stand up for myself. And you are being a face in the pageant world for survivors of domestic violence. And so when they see you, you walk with the grace of all the rest of us on your back. All of us survivors on your back. Because when you make it to a certain level in your life, and pageantry is definitely that, because you're pictures and you're traveling and they're honoring and all those things. But the basic person that's way down, just doing the work, the women that are trying to come out of it and get their life together, what would you encourage them to do to get their voices heard and to be seen?
It's not an easy thing to break your silence. It takes a lot of courage, power, and strength. But the day that you discover your voice, your power, and your strength is the day that your healing begins. The transformation begins. 3 years ago, I woke up one morning, prayed for my abuser, and later that day I would forgive him. That day I found the ultimate freedom, and I began to really move forward. And it's very important in not only breaking our silence, but forgiving ourselves as well. I held so much grief. I held so much guilt. Guilt that my son, who's autistic, had to go through the abuse and endure the abuse as well from my abuser. So I think it's very important in moving forward and in having that transformation to first forgive yourself. Love yourself.
I love the way you went back to apologize to your son, because one of the hardest things is to give birth to children and say that I will love you, respect you, and protect you. And then we stay in these relationships for numerous reasons. And that entire time, the kids are not protected, respected, or taken care of. Although we think we're doing really well, having my own 9 children, there was times where at that point I had 7 children, and I felt like I was protecting them, taking care of them, until child welfare stepped in and said, those things you were doing was your best ability, but you could have done much better. What was the thing, when you look at your son, what was the thing that made you say, you know what, I am done, because my son is watching me? What was that day like? Take me on that journey.
On April 25th, 2015, I was attacked by my abuser in an 18-wheeler. I was beaten, sexually assaulted, and strangled almost to death. With only seconds to live, drawing on my experience as an emergency medical technician and first responder, I made a split-second decision to save my life. But what I saw before doing that, I saw my son, and I prayed and I asked God if he would spare me and allow me to go back to my son and my family. I would be his voice, his hands, his feet, everything, anything God wanted me to do. So So it was in the moment of the final seconds that I thought that I had to live, mm-hmm. and the fight for my life. My son kept me alive. My grandmother's spirit kept me alive.
So you drew from accessory, you drew from whatever you can draw from to keep your strength to move forward.
Yes, and I did everything in that attack, and I did everything possible to save my life so that I could return, be spared. So, and God allowed me. You know, I'm only here because God allowed me the second chance. God gave me a second chance, and I wasn't going to waste a single second of it. And mm-hmm. I began my mission and my journey.
Good for you. So it's been 4 years. You've been on this journey like crazy, huh?
Yes, and I'm so honored to be receiving the Lifetime Presidential Achievement Award. I'm going to travel, God willing, to Texas to receive this award at an awards banquet. I don't receive it for myself, Latoya. This award is not for me. It's on behalf of all victims and survivors around the globe.
That's right.
It is for them.
Good for
I'm just the representative of it. I'm just the acceptor. It is mm-hmm. It's not even for the Crowns of Courage Project. It is to honor all victims and survivors worldwide.
I understand that. I understand that.
And congratulations to you too, Latoya. You are also a recipient as well.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that. I appreciate that opportunity. It's an amazing opportunity. But when I think deep down inside of the trench work, right? That's where my head go. Like, this is some deep rooted type of work that you have to have a unique experience to be willing to do the work without being judgmental, without being resentful, and now without being egotistical. So for you to get it, I'm excited for you and amazed, and definitely you deserve it. And you keep trudging. I mean, we have this upcoming annual symposium that's due to happen in a few weeks. And as far as I know, you'll be flying out here and we will, you know, have that opportunity. What does that feel like for you?
It is a tremendous honor. Honestly, it's an honor of a lifetime. Thank you for allowing me. Thank you for inviting me to the She Experience featuring the Crowns of Courage Project Gala. I'm honored.
Yeah.
I can't even find the word. I'm sorry, I can't find the words right now. I'm just gonna
it's okay. It's okay. So
tremendous honor.
It's an honor for me too, because here's what happened. So maybe 4 or 5 years ago, we did the crowning of the queens and all of the thing. And the theme was Queens on the Move. And we crowned women and we did the thing, something similar to what we're doing now. And the amazing, that's the last time we was in person, because it hasn't been in person since. However, it's such an amazing opportunity to watch women get celebrated, be inspired, be encouraged, because again, people will say anything. However, to be able to do it is something different, right? It's something different. And so I'm excited. I'm so excited about the She Experience year 11. I'm so excited. And the fact that we're back in person really excites me.
Yeah.
You'll be traveling. I know you travel the world. Tell me a little bit about what you do in the world.
I am the reigning Miss Global Talent Wheelchair Mexico Universe. 3 weeks ago, it's been a month now, a month ago, I was appointed the title of Miss Mexico Wheelchair Universe. Jaime Williams, CEO of Global Talent, of the Miss Global Talent Universe. His pageant is headquartered in Lima, Peru. It is the only universe wheelchair title and pageant system in the world. It's a tremendous honor It's kind of surreal. It's surreal, really, to know that I hold the only Wheelchair Universe title in the world for the country of Mexico, my family's home country.
Okay.
Yes.
I love it.
Thank you. And I'm a model. I just came back from New York Fashion Week. This Sunday night, I came home from New York Fashion Week. I modeled in 4 shows.
Okay, good for you. So what's your favorite? Because I traveled the country for about 10 years working with child welfare, changing policies and practices. Although when you see people travel, you're like, oh my God, it must be fun. I want to travel. But when I had boots to the road, I would have layovers in the airport. Planes would leave me. People be rude and disrespectful. I remember this one time. By this time, I made a lot of points, so I had enough points to ride in first class. And once I got ready, because I don't ride first class, I'll just get on the airplane. Everybody be there at the same time. And so that was my thought process at first. And so when I get there, I get, and the lady saw me, and she said, honey, you're supposed to be over there. I said, no, I'm supposed to be right here. And because I'm no longer passive, people that are passive cannot handle my energy. I'm not passive. I'm not rude. I'm not disrespectful, but I'm not going to let you run over me and I don't say anything. So she said, you need to go over there. I said, no, ma'am, I need to be right here. She said, no, you need to go over here. And then I had to flip her out my premier card. She's like, oh, ma'am, I'm so sorry. I thought you was in the wrong line. How did you get that? Right? So sometimes when you are a survivor of sexual assault and domestic violence, sometimes it's harder for us to speak up for ourselves, right? It's really hard. And then people will kind of run over you. So I had to learn, nope, I'm going to do it respectfully always. But that traveling was something else. What is your favorite part about traveling?
Traveling is a little different for me. I'm in a wheelchair due to complications from diabetes. There are many difficult, it's not easy. Sunday night when I came back from, New York, I was in the Denver airport. The woman that was assigned to me to help me and assist me to the luggage, I waited for her for an hour and 45 minutes. She kind of forgot about me, even though I was on her list. And sometimes that happens. There's the rush of the airport and having to help other disabled persons, people with disabilities that are in wheelchairs, whatever their situation is, walkers. Sometimes we do get forgotten, and it's actually not that we're forgotten. There's just so busy overlooked, I guess. But there was a woman who told me that the bathroom, the handicap bathroom with the female and male sign, did not just belong to us, meaning that it just didn't belong to disabled people. And that hurt my feelings.
Yeah.
And sometimes go through the airport and people stare at me. One of the biggest things for me is when we use the aisle chair, when people with disabilities use an aisle chair, we are strapped down for our safety. And we're strapped with many straps. You know, you kind of feel like it, and of course everybody on the plane is staring. So for me, it would have to be the aisle chair. Because that is, you know, how you're strapped in, you feel like you're just
safe.
You have to be safe. Yes, you feel like you're safe, but it's also kind of, if you're a claustrophobic person or you don't want to be like feeling like you're enclosed. Yes, yeah. So we do face many things being disabled.
All right. So what was your first memory of domestic violence? Because you're an advocate. You've been advocating for domestic violence. And so I'm going to throw out some questions about domestic violence. And I know you have all of the answers. So what are the 5 forms of abuse? And explain it to the women on what they can do to get themselves safe. What's the 5 forms of abuse?
Narcissism. Verbal abuse, sexual abuse, emotional abuse. There's also control. I mean, control, it's control and domination. That's so much of it is just, it's a vicious cycle of control. And for me, I was told what to wear. My phone was monitored.
Got you. So also the spiritual and the financial abuse. And yes. A lot of times the spiritual abuse, you're not allowed to praise and worship your own beliefs. And the financial abuse, somebody dictating and controlling all of the finances. Either you're not aware of what's being spent, how the income is, or you don't have access to it. So, gotcha. And so when I think about love bombing and I think about being in these relationships with abusive person, when the love bombing is happening, you're in love. They're making you feel beautiful. They're making you feel worthy. Have you been in a relationship since you've gotten out?
I was in a relationship, but we were not able to. I'm not at the point right now to be intimate with anybody.
Okay.
And having a relationship, you have to be able to be intimate with that person as well.
So are you meaning physically intimate, or you just mean it? Because there's all types of intimacy. There's a physical intimate and just a close relationship.
Yes, it's physical.
Gotcha. You're not ready for that right now, huh?
No.
Okay. Makes a lot of sense.
Even after almost nine years.
Oh, well, good for you. That's amazing to be celibate for 9 years. That's a definitely an accomplishment. It's amazing because I have a couple of women that are also survivors, and they talk about how important it is to be celibate. And in the first year of recovery here at my organization, I always offered that, because what happens is if you begin to be physically intimate with a person and you're just out of a relationship, it's so easy to get stuck and attached into another relationship because you're getting your physical needs met, versus really truly understanding who you are as a woman, what's your favorite color, where you like to go, what you like to eat. All those things are so, so important. And while you're out advocating for all of us survivors across the country, it's very important that we begin, you're probably already doing it, but I know I have this conversation all the time, is self-love. And self-love is so deep and deeply rooted in our DNA, you know, being responsible for who we are and how we do things. So yeah. You have a platform. What is your motto? What do you say when you're done at the end? What is the end sentence that you give? Mine is, change is hard, and oh my God, change is painful, but do it anyway. You'll be amazed before you halfway through. I've been blessed to live a life beyond my wildest dreams because I made those changes. So look within yourself and make it happen. Now, what would you leave someone with?
My motto is, the day I discovered my voice is the day that I let go as a victim and emerged as a survivor, believing in myself and believing in the power of myself. That's what happened. The day that I found my voice, I became a survivor that day, mm-hmm. taking back my power, my life, rebuilding my life. I had to rebuild my life from the ground up. I was left a shell of myself. I crawled out of a ditch off of being pushed off the truck. I crawled out of that ditch. I was a shell of myself. Mm-hmm. I was alive, but a big part of me died on that truck as well.
Absolutely. And just being a survivor myself, I would say you were already dead. You started living when you crawled out that ditch, because you was ready to fight for yourself.
Yes.
Being in those relationships, we're like the movie, The Walking Dead, and you just walk and do and walk and do and walk and do, which is not connected to who we are or what we enjoy doing. And then when something as tragic as that happens, then we get out and then we begin to fight for ourselves. And now it seems like not only are you a survivor, that you're also thriving, right? Being able to thrive, not just survive, because survival, it's a beautiful thing, but you got to survive to thrive. You have to begin to thrive. A new life. I mean, you are an entrepreneur now. Now you're trying to figure out how to monetize your company. All those things are completely amazing. It is. Because as a survivor, what I realized, we just give, 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 give. And then a lot of times you still get taken advantage of, and just because you're not being abused, you feel like everything is okay, but it's not always. We have to stand up and say, no, this, I'm sorry, in a nice, respectful way. I'm sorry, but this can't happen. And so you standing up for yourself and crawling out that ditch was completely amazing. Amazing. For you and your son.
Thank you. And for 80 hours, I did everything I could to survive. Every command, everything my abuser told me, I did. And I understood. You know, the Gabby Petito story really affected me. Yeah. And that they would find her here in my home state of Wyoming. Okay. Because I understood. I knew what it is like. I understood what it was like to be in that situation where you're traveling with your abuser. And she's doing everything she could to survive as well. Mm-hmm. Even telling the police it was her fault that she started it.
Right.
And this is what you do as a victim. This is what you do because you're controlled, you're trained. It's what you know. You to protect your abuser. And most of the time as I travel and I speak, I do my best to answer the number one question asked of me anywhere I go. Why do women go back? Why did you get on that truck? And I'm dedicating my mission and my crown and my title and my voice to help others understand that we are in a cycle. It is a vicious cycle of power and control. We are not in control of our own thoughts. We are not in control of our own actions. And if we don't do what we're told to do, we'll pay the price. Our children will pay the price. We are imprisoned in this relationship.
You said it amazingly, because I, like you, when I get asked that question, the first thing I say is, why did he abuse in the first place? You worried about why I went back? It's common sense why I went back, but for the average person, if he did this, I would never go back. People are aggressive and abusive all the time. It's just the way some people communicate, very aggressively, especially when they're irritated or having a bad moment. They don't know how to process those emotions, so they lash out. But when you're talking about domestic violence, that's so much more than just lashing out. It's totally about power and control. And so you've been able to get out, stay out. You've been out, it seems as though, 9 years. You've been celibate for 9 years. You found your voice. Not only have you found your voice, you begin your, I'm going to call it an assignment from God, because for some reason, when I was in my situation, I felt like I heard him tell me that this is what I got to do. So I've been on this road for 24 years. December 31st, it'll be 25 years I've been on this journey, and I feel like he's not done with me yet, right? He's not done with me. I believe that I'm going other places now that I have other people in my life, because I used to try to limit who comes in my space, because, you know, I got trust issues, because you show me who you are, I'm going to believe you. So I started trying to reach out a little bit more, and I have some amazing people that I like to say that are embarking in my life. And so, but it all comes from stepping out there, because that abusive relationship caused me not to trust, right?
Yes.
And that guilt that you have with your children, I had that guilt because I was trusting everybody and they weren't doing the right thing. So today, as an entrepreneur, what is your next big thing?
My next big thing is my dream book called 80 Hours, chronicling the 80 hours that my journey began. It started on April 22nd April 23rd when I boarded that truck, and it ended late on April 25th. I calculated approximately 80 hours. It was more than 72 hours. And it's approximately 80 hours that I had to do everything I could I boarded the truck from my sister's house in California. 4 hours into the Nevada desert, my abuser ran over my phone with the back wheels of the 18-wheeler and tied my wheelchair under the truck. I knew immediately I was in trouble. And I knew that I had to do the best I can to have a level head. My training taught me that. My training as a first responder in EMT is another thing that saved my life.
Mm-hmm. Wow. So it's like the power and control, he dismantled your legs and tied them under the truck. It's completely amazing how narcissistic people try to control every aspect of your life. You know, they could get a little bit of control. That's just it. And that's why where I am today, I have a hard time with people controlling stuff because it always worked that way. When somebody got control of a certain area, they take advantage of it. And I am so glad that you've been celibate this time and being able to hold on and bring yourself up to a place where you can stand strong.
Thank you. And another thing regarding my story is people ask me, was I allowed to go to the restroom? Was I allowed to eat? Yes. He would take me off the truck because I'm only 5 feet and he'd lift me up on and off the truck. I was able to get him. He was able to put me back in my wheelchair. This is just the control that he had over me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was out in the public. Nobody knew I was going through what I was going through. When he did strike me, it would be where nobody could see me. So I had, my abuser had about a size 10 shoe, maybe 11 foot shoe, size 11 shoe. And I had that imprint across my chest.
Mm-hmm.
And everything he had done to me, it was so calculated because he made sure that nobody could see my face.
Right.
No, this is just some abusers out there, they're just that calculated.
Absolutely. I think majority of them, because they do it in secrecy with the thought process of I'm not doing anything wrong. What's wrong? This is me. That's abusive, right? When you mentioned that shoe on your chest, when they took my kids, I had one across my butt because I got hit with a big boot, and that boot left up. I mean, we talking about a 12. My abuser wore a size 12. When he hit me with that boot print was there for a long, long, long time. I mean, terrible. Just whacked me with it. But I have to say this, and this is no disrespect to any other survivors that are out there, but I feel like for me, being in recovery, people say, oh, I got my life back. I'm amazed. This is beautiful. I didn't have a life before being in recovery. I did not. Some people get their life back. Oh, I'm back to myself. No, I get to live a second lifestyle. That's why my company is called Two Lifestyles. I grew up in a home with dysfunctional parents. And because of it, it just went down the line, the generation. And I just followed suit because it was what I seen. Tell me what it was like growing up in your home with your parents.
My parents, they divorced when I was 11. And my father, he married a woman with four children. And my parents had four children. So one day, I'm meeting a new lady who will become my stepmother, and she has four children. It was kind of a shock. We had to adapt, and now we were eight children. And everyone was fighting for my father. My three sisters, my stepsisters and I, we were fighting for the attention of my father,
mm-hmm.
because their fathers were not in their lives.
Right.
And it wasn't easy. One day I had my daddy to myself, and then the next day I was sharing him, and everybody fighting for his attention, for his love.
How do you go ahead, sweetie?
Oh, go ahead.
How do you believe the abuse affected your mental well-being?
I handled the trauma with anorexia and bulimia. Having diabetes as well, taking shots. I was even in a recovery home. I was in eating disorder clinics, mm-hmm. and eating disorder homes.
So you also acquired an addiction along the way, huh?
Yes, and the lowest I weighed was 87 pounds. And this is how I dealt with my trauma. It was not easy for me in high school as well. I was jumped in high school. I went to high school in LA County, California, in Bellflower, California. And in the 80s, there wasn't any anti-bullying. You were pretty much on your own. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I would be jumped by girls, and they would even write my name on the bathroom walls. Most of my life, I have known abuse. I've known sexual abuse, emotional abuse, physical abuse. But I've also known to be cut down.
Mm-hmm. And so, what is your strength today?
My strength is first in the power of God. Mm-hmm. Strength is my faith. God and my faith.
That is exactly a good amount of strength, right? Because he goes before you.
Yes, and the strength is also knowing the reason why I survived. Knowing that my mission and my purpose. Having a mission and a purpose and knowing it and seeing it unfold. Mm-hmm. It's so powerful. It gives me for the first time in my life, October 7th, during the day after the gala, I'll turn 54. For the first time in my life, I know I belong when others have told me I don't. When others have told me I'm nothing, I'm nobody. And my abuser would call me a worthless cripple. But I know today that that is not true. And that's never been true. I now hold the highest wheelchair title in the world.
That's right. I think you bring about a good conversation, because a lot of times when we are abused, and it starts with, if you look, don't take it from me, but look it up for yourself. When you talk about being abused as a young age, first you get that healthy attachment at home don't grow real well with your parents. Then you end up getting mistreated at school. Then you end up getting in unhealthy relationships, right? And yeah. And then once you get out and you begin to pull on who you are and how you want to function, things begin to look much different. But it takes a lot of work. It's a lot of internal work. What's the thing that you do on a daily basis that give you strength to fight?
I begin every morning with prayer, meditation. I begin the day with prayer and meditation.
So do you have like a journal guide, or do you journal? Because I'm a journaler. I write down what I'm feeling and then I can go back. I mean, I got stuff all over the place where I just start writing stuff down and writing it down and writing it down and writing it down because I need to get it out of here. I got 24 years of this, and I want to ask you, as you continue your journey, no matter who comes in your face or your space, make sure you keep your eye on whatever that is that God has you to do. Don't divert, because it's a lot of sparkly things on the side that makes us feel good, and it's not always good, right?
Yes.
I think early on that was hard for me, because I would do a lot of speaking engagements in different places. And then once the years passed by, I was good enough to do a speaking engagement, but I'm not good enough for this. And I was good enough for this. And I'm not good enough for that. And finally, as a businesswoman, entrepreneur, because first and foremost, I'm a survivor. I've been through domestic violence. So I get that mindset of put down, belittle, all that. But when my own mind start going there, that's when I got to kick in work. Because your mind will tell you you ain't good enough. I don't know about you, but my mind tell me that still sometimes.
Yes, yes, my mind does too. Yes, absolutely. And we have to believe in the power of ourselves. Love ourselves first. That takes work. It doesn't happen overnight. To look in the mirror. I wake up in the morning, I look in the mirror and I say, "Good morning, beautiful." Mm-hmm. I become my own cheerleader.
Mm-hmm. You have to be. Way before I heard that song, because the word gorgeous is used around my family all the time. And I would say good morning, gorgeous, all the time. And then Mary Blige got this song, "Good morning, gorgeous." The first time I heard it, I was like, oh my gosh, she heard me saying that to myself all the time. It's such a beautiful song. She's probably been telling herself that every day too, right? Because you got to get up and you got to look in the mirror. I do stickies with affirmations. One day I was sharing about my affirmations. My husband said, "Hey, I haven't seen those around the house as much. I don't need them as much as I used to when I started." When I first started that, I had stickies everywhere, in the refrigerator, by the closet, on the mirror, in the bathroom. I had stickies everywhere so I can be faced with daily affirmations. I am good enough. I am worthy. I am beautiful. I am gorgeous. Right? I had to do that because all of that negative chatter that people seeded in my mind was beginning to take root. It's not real. In order for me to de-weed their stuff, I had to put some positive stuff on it. But you got to go down there and get the negative stuff. Because, you know, if you got a yard full of weeds, you can't just sprinkle good grass seeds and expect it to come out pretty grass. You got to go and treat that dirt, the mind, the body, and the spirit with positive affirmations on a daily basis. You know, I've been able in the 24 years transform my mind and my spirit, and now I'm working more on my body. So I go to the gym Monday, Wednesday, Friday. I'm eating much different. You know, I'm lifting weights. I'm starting to see my rocks come back, you know, just taking care of my body. What is the thing that you do other than meditation to keep you well-rounded on a daily basis?
I listen to praise music as well. And I also try my best to work and advocate 9 to 5 so that I have a regular work schedule. And the night and the evening belongs to me. I watch a movie. I read. So a lot of times you can immerse yourself in your advocacy. This work is emotional.
Yes.
It's mental. You have to have the drive and the dedication to help others and hear stories from other women. Women connect with me all the time, and not just in the US, but from around the world.
Yeah.
And they share their stories with me.
Yeah.
And I have to be the rock and that strength for them.
Oh, good for you.
And they trust me.
It's a beautiful thing, but don't forget to take care of you. Because being a counselor, some of the stories, not a lot of them anymore. When I first started, I would take their stories in. They will become like, oh my God, I feel so sorry for her. I couldn't practice sympathy, empathy, and all those things like I should have as a counselor. Everything was on my shoulders, I felt. And then I got to a spot where I learned how to separate it. You know, my job is to be there for them and not take it in, because I was taking in too much, too much, too much, too much. What is the best thing about advocating for other women?
When a woman tells you that she's ready to get help. When a woman messages me and says, "Thank you for helping me. My children are safe. I'm safe."
Good job.
So thank you for listening to me. Thank you for being there for me.
So do you give her a safety plan to get out and get safe? Is it your story that inspires them? How do you actually advocate for them?
Yes, it's my story. I advocate through my pages. I have the Crowns of Courage Project. I have the Crowns of Courage Project page, the Lawyer Project page. Yes, there are three pages where women can connect with me and I connect with them.
So do you give them like a safety plan on getting out and getting out safe? Because here's my question. This is why I'm asking. If you're the face to it and they see you made it out and you're doing well, they're trying to get out. How can they get out safe? Because if they get out and they don't get out safe, it can cause them death. Because the time that women are at the highest risk of murder is when they're trying to leave and when they're pregnant. So when they get on your page, and if you don't, I would encourage you to think about it. I can even send you a copy of mine, but to give them a safety plan so they'll know how to get out. Because wanting to get out and getting out safe is two different things.
Yes, and I have also helped other. I've also helped these women. I've also helped women, and I've looked up the safe houses in their area. I've
Good
helped
job.
them. I help them also. Yes, not only do I encourage and support them, but I also find the closest resources to them as best I
Okay.
can.
So you also are linked, your linkages, you're linking them to other services. That makes good.
In their county, state,
Good
region.
job. Good job. Because so many times, I answer the warm line here at Two Lifestyles on the weekend, and I often get women, like some ladies, like, I heard your YouTube channel. It made me want to call and talk to you, or I heard you on Facebook, or somebody told me about you, and all these reasons. And so I get on the phone, and what they really need is just a way out. My story have inspired them to get out, but they need a safe way out. And so I have an 11-page safety plan. And it's very detailed down to how you park your car, where you, everything you need to have. So women can get out safe and then be inspired and encouraged to move on, because that getting out is the dangerous part, very dangerous.
Yes, the moment I said I'm going to find a way off this truck, and I'm going to not only reveal to the police what's been going on, but to my family, that was it. Immediately, the fight for my life began.
Yeah.
And it would be great, Latoya, when I come to see you and come to the event, if you could please, yes, help bless me with that so that I
I
can
will.
help available. Thank
I
you.
remember when you came here, you said, I would love for you to mentor me in this way because I want to help and I want to know how. I don't have an issue with being supportive. It does. We have to help the world. It's not about us. We made it out. We're out.
Yes, praise
And by the
God.
grace of God, I pray and trust that I never have to go back in. I'm in a relationship that's beyond my wildest dreams. Sometimes I look at it and it's like, he's never cussed at me. He's never been disrespectful. As far as I know, he haven't cheated on me. We have a good relationship. I have a healthy relationship, and sometimes healthy ain't always fun because I'm a wild child when I can be. But I learned that this man loved me, and I know the true meaning of self-love first, right?
Yes.
Self-love.
Above.
And so as we advocate for other women, we got to put in their hand resources, because they just be so overwhelmed by the joy of, he tried to, the guy, my abuser, tried to electrocute me and all of this stuff strapped down. And, they fascinated by that because I made it out. But the truth of it is that was my story. How can I get you out? How can I help you get out? Because they're still living in it.
Yes.
And the children. And the children.
Yes. And then after I'm out, then we'll, after my children and I are out, by the
Then
grace of
what?
God, we're all alive, then what? Exactly. Then what? Where do we go from here?
I create an assessment for the women that come through my doors. It's a 12-facet assessment, and it covers the facets that we as women need the most support with, like housing, education, work, financial stability, mental stability, physical stability, spiritual. I should know this on the top of my head. Social, recreation, fun, community, and it's one more. It's 12 of them. But what I did with my company and why I created it this way is because I needed so much. And people will come to me and say, oh, well, you can do this. And what about this? And what about this? And hey, what about this? None of that worked for me because what they were doing was just throwing out stuff. I don't need you to get me out and keep me out. I need you to help me keep myself out. And how do I know not go back in? That was the hard part. So I do this exercise, the guy pie, teaching them how to find a healthy man. What does a healthy man for you look like? It may not look like what mine look like, but yours may be different. And then what do I bring to the table? And how can I want more? Because I spent the last 24 years just in here advocating, holding on by the grace of God. Now I'm ready to live and exist. So now I'm able to probably in the next year be able to monetize some of my services because I don't have Medi-Cal. I don't have any of those big programs. I've been out doing it one family at a time. I have a very decent facility. Thank God for that. But it's taking my husband's retirement when I was working in other thing. It's not really an easy thing to do when you by yourself. So what I love about your project is that you're linking all of the survivors who want to do the work together and then a network of survivors so they can all branch off and be supportive for each other, right? This is not a silo thing. It's not the crabs in the bucket. You doing this, I'm doing this. It has to be really inclusive and collective. That's what I feel that really works.
Yes, and the Crowns of Courage project is an interactive, not just social media, it's an interactive project. Women, it's a national and international where I connect and other women connect in the U.S. and now 8 other countries. Last month, I awarded and recognized a woman in Gambia, West Africa, and my project has reached the continent of West Africa.
Okay. Well, the beauty of it is with Facebook and all of that, girl, you can go to the end of the planet in 5 seconds. That's what I love about the internet. And you market and you support. Good job. I'm proud of you. And in closing, because I can talk to you forever, I said, I am amazed of what the work that you get to do. It's an honor to get to do this. You don't have to when you're tired. Like, I gotta know. You get to be a humble servant. Because being humble is a service in itself. Just being humble. It's a complete service. You can't see it, but instead of my sign on my front door saying CEO or owner or whatever, it says Latoya Conway Hampton, humble servant. That's what my door says. And what that means to me is I will freely, willingly and lovingly support other survivors. But what I will not do is drag them alone. They got to be willing to come. And then I can help you. And I have thousands of stories to prove it. My walls, you know, it's about 175 women up here, but, you know, all along the walls. But, you know, I can't, if I could put everybody up that ever been through here, trust me, I would. Just to walk through the wall of beauty and look at all of these beautiful women who transform their life. Oh my God, is it amazing? It's so amazing. And to watch them live their life. And so you talk about the legacy. What is your legacy?
My legacy is I hope and pray that I was a light in this world. My legacy is to honor women, men, children. The Crowns of Courage project and my advocacy is not just for women, it's men as well. All victims, it encompasses all victims and survivors of domestic violence and sexual assault.
Good for you.
I hope people remember that the legacy to honor the courage and strength. It takes tremendous courage, strength, and power, especially when breaking your silence.
It does. Experience strength and hope, right?
Yes, experience strength and hope, courage, strength, power. But when you find that power, the day comes, and the day will come, believe me, a day will come for you. When you find your voice and you take back your power and you start rebuilding your life and believing in yourself, your dreams can be at your feet. I'm living my dreams right now. I'm living my dream.
You know what? I agree with you 100% because I'm definitely living my dream. I remember when my kids were taken away and they were placed in foster care and I was staying in a sober living. I just remember saying, oh my God, I want to be able to have my own agency where when women come in there, I can hug them and love them and be supportive to them and be a voice to them. I want to buy myself a beautiful home, a green home. I want to have RVs. I had all of these visions inside of me to be able to help people. And so God makes that happen as long as I do the right thing, right?
Yes, amen.
So I'm living my dream and being a survivor. I heard so many times that I would never be anything. I wasn't good enough. You're only good for having kids. But today I understand my worth and my value. And I use my voice to inspire, encourage, and educate other women. Although Two Lifestyles is a women empowerment program on one side of our facility, we do service men. But my passion is to inspire and encourage women and girls because I was a teenage mom. I was sexually assaulted by my stepfather. I was gang raped by 6 boys. You know, I got in a relationship that was abusive. I've been strapped to grenades and electric buckets and alarm clocks and all of these tragedies just so I can give back and be a humble servant because I get to be a light today.
Yes.
So,
we are lights. Yes.
In closing, what would you love to say? What would you like to leave on the heart of our listeners?
No matter what anyone may have said to you today, today, tomorrow, or yesterday, you are beautiful. Your life has meaning. You have meaning. Not only do you have worth and value, but you have a mission and a purpose from God too, as well. And believe in yourself. Love yourself. Thank you.
You're welcome. And I want to say this in closing. I believe this because I live this. To whom much is given, much is required. I've been given a life beyond my wildest dreams. I've been blessed to travel the country to inspire social workers on how they work with survivors of domestic violence and watching them shift how they work with families, being a part of changing and developing programs that are still used 20 years down the line. I am honored to be a humble servant. And I want to say, no matter what you experience in your life or in your relationship, you, yourself, and only you have the key to your life, to your journey. Dig within yourself. Figure out why do you choose these type of people? Why do you need people around that dictate and all these things? And I know it sounds harsh when you hear it, but also realizing what part you play in that abusive relationship. Even if it's just staying, you play a part. My name is LaToya Conway Hampton, and I am your host. Thank you for tuning in to Two Lifestyles Royal Table Talk.